This is a 5 train. The next stop is Wall Street.
Herzlich willkommen zu Wall Street Weekly, dem Börsenpodcast aus New York. Ich bin Sophie Schimanski, schön, dass Sie mit dabei sind. Die Krise hat nicht nur uns, sondern auch die Regierungen und Notenbanken in den absoluten Ausnahmezustand versetzt. Die amerikanische Notenbank hat so schnell in so vielen Anlageklassen eingekauft, also zum Beispiel Staatsanleihen, Unternehmensanleihen, Bond-ETFs und so viel Geld in die Wirtschaft gepumpt wie nie zuvor. Die US-Regierung ist auf dem Weg, ein weiteres Hilfspaket zu verabschieden, denn die Krise hält an. Wir schauen in dieser Folge, was die Notenbank für die zweite Hälfte des Jahres geplant hat und wie die US-Regierung sie mit fiskalpolitischen Maßnahmen unterstützt oder auch nicht. Eines ist klar, der Geldhahn muss so lange aufgedreht bleiben, wie das Virus wütet. Das kann sich ziehen. Die Frage ist, wie viel mehr Geld benötigt wird. Darüber spreche ich mit dem zweifachen Pulitzer-Preisgewinner David Wessel. Er ist Direktor des Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy bei der Brookings Institution. Das ist Washingtons Top-Denkfabrik. Und ich habe Greg McBride dran. Er ist Analyst bei Bankrate und gern gesehener Kommentator auf CNBC, NBC und ABC. Und jetzt auch bei mir. Corona hat für einen weiteren traurigen Rekord gesorgt. Für den schlimmsten BIP-Einbruch in der amerikanischen Geschichte. Das US-Bruttoinlandsprodukt, das GDP, fiel im zweiten Quartal auf Jahresbasis um fast 33%. Die Zahl ist die schlechteste seit dem Beginn der Aufzeichnungen in den 40er Jahren. Auch die zunächst leicht fallende Zahl der Arbeitslosen ist nun wieder angezogen. Der Vorsitzende der US-Notenbank Fed, Jerome Powell, meint, dass die derzeitigen Daten auf eine abflachende Erholung hinweisen.
The pace of the recovery looks like it has slowed since the cases began that spike in June. So some measures of consumer spending based on credit card and debit card data have moved down. Recent labor market indicators point to a slowing in job growth, particularly among smaller businesses. Hotel occupancy rates have flattened out. People aren't going out to restaurants, bars, gas stations, pharmacies, and beauty salons as much. Consumer surveys, by the way, which had dropped very sharply when the pandemic arrived and then moved back up sharply, they look like they may be softening again now. This is what we're seeing, and of course we're monitoring it very carefully.
Immer mehr Ökonomen verabschieden sich von der Hoffnung, dass es eine V-förmige Erholung der Wirtschaft gibt. Also dem schnellen, tiefen Einschnitt würde in diesem Fall eine schnelle, steile Erholung folgen. Aber die Zahlen sehen anders aus. Das sagt hier zum Beispiel Neil Kashkari, der Vorsitzende der Notenbank von Minneapolis.
It seems like we're going to have various phases of rolling flare-ups, different parts of the economy turning back on, maybe turning back off again. This could be a long, hard road that we have ahead of us until we get to either an effective therapy or a vaccine. It's hard for me to see a V-shaped recovery under that scenario.
Die Fed hat dementsprechend bereits eine breite Palette von Maßnahmen ergriffen, um den wirtschaftlichen Schaden zu begrenzen und das sehr zügig. Sie hat die Zinsen auf fast null gesenkt in einem Sonderschritt und vor einigen Tagen auch erst beschlossen, sie da zu lassen. Außerdem gab es Kredite von bis zu 2,3 Billionen US-Dollar zur Unterstützung von Haushalten, Unternehmen, Finanzmärkten und lokalen Regierungen in den Bundesstaaten. Für diese Maßnahmen gibt es Lob von vielen Seiten, zum Beispiel von Analyst und Kommentator Greg McBride.
It has been unprecedented, but entirely warranted. You know, US economy specifically, but really the global economy basically hit a brick wall at 100 miles an hour. You know, normally when you have a recession, it's kind of a slow grind into a recession over an extended period of time. You don't have this sudden stop like we had this time with the pandemic, where it, you know, turn out the lights and literally send everybody home.
Das Balance Sheet, die Bilanz, beläuft sich aktuell auf mehr als 7 Billionen Dollar. Nach der Finanzkrise stand es bei 2,2 Billionen Dollar und ist seitdem ständig gewachsen. Analysten der Deutschen Bank gehen sogar davon aus, dass sich die Bilanz der Fed in weniger als einem Jahrzehnt auf über 20 Billionen US-Dollar ausweiten könnte. Dazu noch einmal Jerome Powell.
We are deploying these lending powers to an unprecedented extent, enabled in large part by the financial backing from the Congress and the Treasury. We will continue to use these powers forcefully, proactively, and aggressively until we're confident that we are solidly on the road to recovery.
Und wenn die Werkzeuge dann wieder verstaut sind und die Rezession überstanden ist, dann müssen Fed und Kongress sich um die Nebenwirkungen dieser Politik kümmern. Und die wird es geben, sagt Greg McBride.
There will be fallout. We don't know exactly what that's going to be. You know, we may well be in a situation where we've kind of got ourselves into this trap of low rates as far as the eye can see. It may fuel asset bubbles over time. We may end up with a surge in inflation at some point. Or it might be none of the above. But yeah, the chances are there are going to be offshoots or fallout from this. But, you know, I think that can't deter you from doing what needs to be done right now, to give the economy everything it needs.
Die Antwort von Kongress und Notenbank sind ohne Alternative. Da sind sich Marktbeobachter einig. Auch wenn wir nie wissen werden, wie eine Welt ohne sie ausgesehen hätte. Greg McBride hat eine starke Metapher für Skeptische.
If somebody has a medical emergency, you call 911. You don't sit back and start thinking about what the ambulance is going to cost and maybe you should just drive them to the hospital instead. I mean, that's where we are from an economic standpoint. And both on the monetary policy side with the Fed, as well as the fiscal policy side with Congress, it's get the money out there, get credit flowing. Let's do what we can to cushion the blow and boost the recovery as quickly as possible and worry about the fallout. Later.
Der Kongress kann Maßnahmen ergreifen, die der Notenbank gesetzlich nicht erlaubt sind. Er kann an Privatpersonen und Unternehmen direkt Geld als Subvention auszahlen, die nicht zurückgezahlt werden muss. Und in solch schwierigen Zeiten ist das für einige Unternehmen sicher geeigneter als ein Kredit, den sie am Ende nicht zurückzahlen können. Nur hängt der Kongress am nächsten Rettungspaket fest, weil Demokraten und Republikaner sich nicht einig werden. Am Montag kündigten die Republikaner des Senats einen neuen Vorschlag für ein Konjunkturpaket an in Höhe von 1 Billion US-Dollar als Nachfolger des CARES Act. Das war ein 2,2 Billionen Dollar Konjunkturpaket, das der Kongress im März verabschiedete. Doch der republikanische Senator Lindsey Graham sagte vor der Abstimmung, die Republikaner würden mit Nein stimmen. Der amerikanischen Wirtschaft läuft währenddessen die Zeit davon, sagt David Wessel in unserem Interview.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, David. So to jump right in, Congress undoubtedly has acted very quickly so far, and I don't want to take away from that, or I don't think we should take away from that, but while the toolbox of the Fed is interesting and has kind of been in the middle of everything last week, what is the problem with the current holdup in Congress?
Basically, they're closing the spigot of fiscal support prematurely. And then the second thing is, as we always know, confidence is a big issue. And at times of crisis, people really do want to know that there are grown-ups in charge. And I think that as bad as the global financial crisis of 2007, 8, and 9 was, and despite all the mistakes they made, it looked like the government, they seem to have a coherent plan most of the time, and certainly relative to now, where, you know, the president says things about the healthcare system and about public health that are not true. The Republicans can't agree on anything. So I think that it undermines public confidence in the capacity of the government to manage this extraordinary crisis when you have this chaos in Washington.
Okay, so while we have chaos in Congress, Jerome Powell begins to sound like our European Mario Draghi because they are willing to do whatever it takes for as long as it might take. And Powell kept saying that they're really ready to use the full toolbox and for as long as it's needed. And I've just been wondering, interest rates are almost zero. The balance sheet has been blown up to like $7 trillion. So what more wiggle room do they actually have? And how credible is Powell when he's saying that they're going to do much more than they're doing currently?
I think the Fed is largely out of monetary ammunition. no central banker is going to ever say, I can't do anything, because that would frighten the hell out of individuals and businesses and markets. But on the monetary front, they've done pretty much all they can do, which is why he's so frequently saying to Congress, you need to do more. The only thing that they haven't done is that in their various special lending programs that were set up because of the pandemic, they haven't been very generous, particularly the ones to businesses, mid-sized businesses, the American equivalent to the Mittelstand, and the state and local governments. They could make those terms easier and maybe more people would borrow there. As I understand it, the problem isn't the Fed's reluctance. It's that this is a joint venture with the Treasury, and the Treasury has been reluctant to make those programs more generous. So as it is, they're kind of standby in case people can't get money, but not very many people are coming to them.
Okay, so you're talking about the $454 billion that can be used to backstop the Fed program, but haven't been all used as loans yet, correct?
Correct. It hasn't. There's still a lot of that money in reserve. And it's good that it's in reserve, because if things get bad, they'll need it. But I think the argument is maybe it's time for them to make the terms on those loans more generous, so more people and will borrow from them, and we get more businesses operating instead of closing their doors.
Why do we even have a problem? Why are we worried about the deficit, about the scale of measurement that the Fed has been taking on and Congress, when the Fed can just keep printing money? What are the side effects of that?
Right. Well, that's a really good question. So there will be people who argue that we should never worry about deficits. The Fed can always print enough money. And one of the things we've learned is that, well, the Fed can certainly do a lot more than we used to think possible. There were economists who said the world would end if the debt to GDP ratio in the US ever got above 90%, or we're closing in on 100% and the world has not ended. There's two issues here. One is, this is clearly the right thing to do now. Carmen Reinhart, who's an economist, a deficit hawk, she's now the chief economist of the World Bank, said, first win the war, then figure out how you're going to pay for it. That's good, and we can do that. And we've borrowed hundreds of billions of dollars without any noticeable increase in interest rates, which suggests that there's enough savings in the world to finance our deficits. The problem is that the budget deficit was on an unsustainable course before this happened, largely because we're an aging society. So now we've made it worse, and we haven't done anything to slow the trajectory, the increase. And so the answer is, for now, we don't have to worry about it, but at some point we will. And to pretend that we'll never get to that point is to mislead people.
I guess the best case scenario right now is a U-shaped recovery. I think the V-shaped recovery is off the table. That is at least what Kashkari from the Minneapolis Fed said. And I'm just wondering, how long can the Fed go on if it is out of ammunition?
If we have either a W-shaped recovery or something that looks like an L of the Nike swoosh, all that means is the Fed will keep doing what it's doing for longer. They'll continue to buy bonds and they'll continue to keep interest rates low. I don't think the problem will be with the Fed. The problem will be that it'll mean there's a lot of pain and suffering in the U.S. economy, and there will be lots of businesses going under that may never restart. And it may mean that this has extremely long-lasting harmful effects, which is why the most important measure to sustain the economy is to get a hold of the virus. If we can't get treatment and a vaccine quickly, then at least we can do the social distancing and the mask wearing and the testing and the contact tracing that has been successful in other places, so that we can restart the economy. So the fear now is not that the Fed will fail at what they're doing. It's that what the Fed is doing will not be sufficient in an economy that is still suffering from this, extraordinary plague.
Right. Trump said that everything will be fine in fall, right before the elections, perfectly. And obviously, he has a strong interest in saying that and in achieving that goal. What do you say about that? Because, I mean, no one can make a reasonable assumption about that right now.
Well, look, I don't think there's trying to interpret what Donald Trump says is impossible. He's not consistent. I think that what we know is that a lot of his advisors were optimistic that the virus was being beaten back and we would have a very strong third quarter following a terrible second quarter. And I think even they are acknowledging that that prediction is looking a little shaky now as the virus has bounced back in many places and we get these lockdowns. After all, the reason the economy is lousy is because we are telling people not to shop, not to go to work, telling factories not to produce things. So it's no surprise that the economy does poorly. It's one of the things that makes this such an unusual event.
But I think what's hard to figure out is the trend of the recovery. The pandemic hit, numbers got worse, obviously, and then better, and now they're slowing again. What is going on here, in your opinion?
Well, I think what happened is that things were starting to get better and people are getting optimistic. But then when people got complacent and there was stopped social distancing and began to open the bars and stuff, that the cases went up. So now things are getting worse again. In his press conference, Chair Powell made the point that what he called non-standard high frequency data, which means things like credit card receipts, air travel, restaurant reservations, that kind of stuff that we get every day, suggests that the economy has slowed down a little bit. So, you know, the Congressional Budget Office told us a month ago that they didn't expect the GDP to return to the level it was at before the pandemic until the third quarter of 2022. So that's a long way off. And I'm worried that it's now going to be even longer because the optimism of just a few weeks ago has been dashed. I mean, I live in Washington, D.C., right next to the state of Maryland, and the governor of Maryland has just announced that they're reimposing some of the lockdown stuff that they had relaxed just a few weeks ago because cases are up.
Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Okay, you're welcome.
Wie üblich zum Schluss noch der Blick auf mein New York und wie wir hier durch die Pandemie kommen. Bei uns sind am Freitag die Corona-Arbeitslosengelder ausgelaufen. Ein neues Konjunkturpaket ist bislang, wie gesagt, nicht beschlossen. Dafür findet New Yorks Bürgermeister Bill de Blasio harte Worte. Er hat die Senatsmehrheit, vor allem die Republikaner, kritisiert. Sie würden eine Einigung nicht nur blockieren, sondern regelrecht sabotieren.
What we need right now more than ever is the federal government to remember the lessons of history and step up and invest in the American people, invest in people here in New York City, do something decisive. And instead, we see the exact opposite, the Senate majority blocking a new stimulus bill. You know, we often talk about paralysis in Washington, gridlock in Washington. This is not gridlock, this is sabotage. Literally standing in the way of a stimulus when people in this country are in desperate, desperate shape. And it can't go on like this. We all, every one of us, regardless of our party affiliation, regardless of what our lifestyle is, our place in the economy, where we live, whatever it is, we all with one voice need to say, the federal government must provide a stimulus immediately to save this country and save this city.
Deswegen will New York selbst finanziell aushelfen. Betroffene New Yorker sollen sich beim Bürgermeister melden. De Blasio hat sich auch Luft gemacht über Donald Trump. Er hat ihn einen Tyrannen genannt.
So now this is where I would normally call upon the chief executive officer of our country to do something. It's exactly what it would take. Literally a few sentences out of Donald Trump's mouth would change the reality in the U.S. Senate. All he would have to do is care enough to say the Senate must provide that unemployment support to everyday Americans. The Senate must put the money in to revive our economy, bring us back, help cities and states be whole. If he just said that, it would happen, and he will not say a word. But what is he saying today? He's suggesting that the fall election should be postponed. Now, let's be plain. This is the act of a tyrant. Tyrant. Tyrant.
Das war's von mir für diese Ausgabe. Wenn Sie Anregungen, Wünsche oder Feedback haben, schreiben Sie mir wie immer einfach eine E-Mail an wallstreetweekly@mediapioneer.com. Ansonsten sage ich bis nächsten Montag. Ich wünsche Ihnen eine gute Woche aus New York. Von ganzem Herzen, Ihre Sophie Schimanski.